Coming up this week on Breaking Badness. Today we discuss, curiosity is the ultimate fish food. We're talking about thread hijacking. What is it, why it's successful, and a recent example. Next up, security alert you can hang your hat on. We'll discuss the latest alert from CISA that affects XZ utils. And of course, our fun game, Gold Guidance and Grievances. With that, Breaking Badness is next. Welcome to Breaking Badness, episode number 185, recorded on April 1st, 2024. I'm your co-host Callie, browser cookie monster Fencil, and with me is co-host Taylor, Foss Boss Breaks Your Compression Session Wilkes Pierce, and last but not least, Tim CC Ryder Helming. Hi, everybody.
Got a little bit of a chuckle there in the names. I forgot. We're supposed to... Isn't this supposed to be the ASMR episode?
Oh, they've got the wrong guest host here.
Well, you know, if we were thinking for April Fools, we ought to come up with something.
Oh.
And I was thinking, you know, security talks about ASM all the time. So how about we do ASMR as our... So we'll have to do that next year.
Oh.
The all ASMR Breaking Badness episode.
I don't think I could have kept up the bit.
I'm going to try it.
Today, yeah, you have to practice.
Today we're going to talk about Brian Krebs and his latest article.
There are a lot. There are a lot of people that would like that.
Oh, I like that a lot. I do either of you follow a lot of ASMR folks out there?
Not even a little bit.
No.
Not even a little
bit. No, but I think the concept is interesting. Just the, how does the physiology of that work? It's kind of interesting.
I know.
It's very powerful for a lot of people, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Honestly, I remember liking, this is my ASMR thing. I remember as a kid, when we would put a record on, I liked the little staticky noise right before the music came in.
I like that too.
I think that's my ASMR of choice.
I like the warm analog tunes of a tube amp, you know?
Yep.
Those gentle popping sounds. It's very relaxing.
Yeah. It says something good's about to happen.
I don't know where I got it. Like, I don't know if I stole it from the internet, but it's like, it's Andy Williams. A couple of his Christmas songs and like the pops are in there. And usually like when that comes on my phone, I'm like, oh, I know what's coming up. It's Andy Williams and I like it as is.
Yeah. I've got a ton of, combination of old cheesy, Christmas albums and more like classical music type ones, on vinyl that I play all the time every year. And so I get a lot of those little pops and clicks.
I'm trying to think what mine is. Like my ASMR of choice is, because I do watch a few of those people because I've noticed it is helpful when right before going to bed. It works for some reason.
It can be relaxing. You know, mm-hmm. I think the record player sound would be relaxing for me. I've never tried that before going to sleep, but now I've got an experiment to do.
You should. All right. Should we talk about InfoSec?
Why not? Why not?
Probably.
It's interesting.
Probably. I think that's what people came here for.
I suppose.
And if you didn't, you know, welcome.
Hey, hop on in. Come for the ASMR, stay for the InfoSec.
Yes, for sure. So the first article we're going to discuss is curiosity is the ultimate fish food. And of course, fish is spelled, you know, P-H-I-S-H and then food. I like to spell it P-H-O-O-D.
You mean all the time or just in this article?
All the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks for the clarification.
So we're going to discuss an article from Brian Krebs on thread hijacking and fishes that prey on your curiosity. So, Tim, to start, what exactly is thread hijacking and what makes it so successful?
Actually, to pre-start, I will mention that Ben and Jerry's fish food actually uses F in the food, which why did they do that? I don't understand. But anyway,
Opportunity. Who totally wants me on their corporate team? I'm on this corporate team.
They could change it.
Well,
they could change it.
I think that's how the fish spell it. So.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
No one's bothered to correct them.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. So thread hijacking. Let me hijack this fish thread to talk about this. Okay, so this is a type of fishing lure where the recipient is CC'd into what appears to them to be an ongoing email thread. And we've probably all had this happen in a non-fishing sort of context. Like, suddenly you're added to some email thread that was in progress and you have to kind of catch up and figure out. But usually when that happens, there's something that says, hey, I'm adding Callie into this thread because she's going to give us some additional context or whatever it is. But in this case, it is a fishing lure. And one of the things that makes this interesting is, unlike other fishing lures, this one is not requesting any particular action or threatening any negative consequences if the recipient, would-be victim, doesn't respond to the fish. So the fisher is sort of taking a chance that the victim is going to fall for the lure when they're not directly addressing them. So what it relies on is, as you alluded to in the title, curiosity. So they're hoping that when the victim gets added in, or the would-be victim, that they will decide to click on the attachment or follow the link or whatever the particular thing might be and get snared that way. But not by being addressed directly, not by being told that, you know, this subscription is going to start charging your credit card if you don't cancel it and whatnot, like we're used to with more conventional phishing methods.
So just to clarify, in the example you give outside of phishing, where somebody might say, hey, adding Callie for additional context, like the fisher won't do that here, or
that's
is
right.
That okay, do you think maybe...
They might sometimes, but I think typically, as I understand it, and I haven't received one of these fishes, nor have I looked into corpuses of them, but I think that's right. I think they silently get added, and the hope is that they're going to find the thing interesting. You know, they won't add them into some incredibly boring thread about, I don't know, somebody's golf plans for the weekend, or sorry if golf is exciting for you. I don't mean to cast aspersions, but they try to create something that will look pretty interesting to the recipient.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just trying to think, how would I fall for this? And I'm feeling like if I fell for it, it would be because somebody directly mentioned me and my attention has been grabbed in that way. But I know everybody's different.
Callie's the last one that hasn't seen this great ASMR video.
And I'll be like, what? I need to see that. I need to be able to fall asleep right now. One of the examples in the article by Krebs mentioned that it's similar to business email compromise, but what is the difference between thread hijacking and business email compromise? Like, are they not synonymous, or
right.
What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So what makes them different is it's sort of a taxonomy. It's because the lure mechanism is different. So if you think about what a traditional business email compromise looks like, the attacker is directly asking the victim, hey, I need you to go buy these gift cards. I need you to transfer these funds into this account and whatnot. And they also either directly or indirectly provide negative consequences. So directly, like, do this right now, or, you know, I'm going to be angry, or something like that. Or indirectly, because of the hierarchy and the power structure. And, like, you know, often these business email compromise lures are coming purportedly from a CEO or CFO or somebody high up in an organization. And often the recipient is farther down in the organization. So the implied negative consequence is, well, if I don't do what the C-suite executive is asking me to do, that might be a career-limiting decision, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. So the outcome of it could be very similar to a conventional business email compromise. So the difference is in what this lure mechanism looks like.
It's from the sparkling region.
You can't call it business. Got to reach for that one.
I know. And I said it wrong. So I'm a little mad at myself. But I'm still glad I went for it.
That was an April Fool's. She actually said it exactly right. But we edited it out.
Oh, good. So you provided an example of thread hijacking, but Krebs shares one from the journalism world. Can you summarize that for our listeners here?
Yeah. So this comes from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where LancasterOnline.com published a story about one Adam Kidan, I don't know how to say that name. I guess I'll go with Kidan, a wealthy businessman with a criminal past who's also a major donor to Republican causes and candidates. And the author of that story, whose name is Brett Schultes, received two emails from Kidan, both of which contained attachments, and they weren't addressed to Schultes, the author of the Lancaster Online article, the journalist. They were just hoping that he would bite. And there were two of these lures, and one of them said it had the subject line, "Re-successfully sent data." And the second one was had the subject line, "Acknowledge new work order." And then the message of that second one said, "Please find the attached." So there were attachments on both of those email threads. Now, our hero, Brett Schultes, was wise to the fact that these looked kind of suspicious, and so he did not click on anything except the forward button, sent them to the IT department, and the IT department did, in fact, flag them immediately as phishing emails. If they had been successful, what these phishes would have been is Microsoft credential theft. So they would have ultimately opened up a phony Microsoft page where the login, if successful, would have been passed through to Microsoft. So that would have made it fairly transparent to the victim. But in the meantime, their Microsoft credentials would have been harvested. So fortunately, they did the right thing, did not fall for this. And in fact, I don't know how Brian Krebs initially found out about it. I don't know if they contacted Brian, but he wrote a great article about it, which, of course, we're linking to in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that reporter had his spidey senses up and was able to send those to the IT team. And In response to that, the IT team sent the emails to the FBI. And what I wanted to ask you is, do you think that's a reasonable response, or is there a step intermediary between sending something to the FBI?
Oh, no, that's definitely a good step. So the FBI is all over this kind of activity, just as a rule, in probably every field office. And according to Krebs, they haven't responded thus far, at least as of time of the Krebs's story publication. They had not responded to the paper. That's not unexpected. I've spoken to FBI agents doing cybercrime stuff. They are flooded. They have a huge amount of this, as you can imagine. You know, if you listen to this podcast more than a couple episodes, it probably becomes pretty apparent. So, you know, will they get back to them on this particular item? I don't know, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a good step. That's absolutely the right thing to do. Now, are there other steps that they should take? I would think that this is a great opportunity for employee awareness training. So if I'm the IT department at LancasterOnline.com, I'm probably going to do some awareness around this, maybe send some screenshots of this phish, maybe explain a little bit about how thread hijacking scams work. It's a teachable moment, so to speak. So that is another one that immediately comes to mind. You know, from a technology standpoint, is there anything you can do about this? It depends. Like, people use different settings on their email security gateways, like the Proofpoints and whatnot of the world. And some take a very strict stance on whether any attachments are allowed through or not. And that's very configurable. And different organizations have different tolerances, right? So you can have a very high sensitivity trigger for blocking attachments, or you can have it more low sensitivity and allow more stuff through. Every organization makes their own decisions about that. I wouldn't be surprised if this organization decides to crank that down a little bit, because most security gateways, you can, you know, you can tell them to deny all attachments or neutralize them. It's likewise with links. You can, you know, neutralize web links that are contained in emails. Now, if you lock all of that down 100%, it's going to severely impede people's ability to get their job done. So nobody's going to go to 100% with those. But it is an opportunity to look at the tuning and ask whether, you know, it's worth ratcheting down a little bit farther.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that brings me to my next question, you know, regarding just emailing in general. I know no one should read the comments on articles, but yeah, so of course I read the comments, and one left on this one said that it's time to move on from email because it's built on legacy tech that is obsolete. And I was just curious, what do you make of that statement?
Yeah. So first of all, to be clear, the comments in question are on the Krebs article, not on the original LancasterOnline.com story. Right. But yeah, so I read the comments myself as well. So I saw that one. And, you know, you can't deny that some of what that commenter is saying is true. But as other commenters ask, and as I would have asked if I had been deciding to chime in on that thread, exact same question. Okay, what are you proposing then that we replace email with? And, you know, there's no really good answer. So I got this for you, Callie. I got a 2025 prediction early. Well, I'm not waiting until December for this one.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
I predict that we're still going to be using email in 2025.
No way.
That's barring a civilization-ending asteroid or solar storm or
going out on a limb there, Tim.
I know it. I know it. You heard it here first. So yeah, I mean, look, it is frustrating that older technologies are subject to scamming. But on the other hand, name a communications platform that is not abused in a phishing kind of method. I mean, it doesn't exist. So like replace it with newer tech. Okay, great. It's still going to get abused in one form or another. Phishing is social engineering. There will always be social engineering. So anyhow, yeah, that's kind of a funny comment. But yeah, we're going to keep on using email, and whatever communications method we're using, we have to have our spidey sense in good shape for catching social engineering attempts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess the alternative, you know, to like any millennials listening to this is at the end of that show Zoom on PBS, they would say, you know.
The show that you were on?
Yeah, I was on that 3 times. No big deal.
Yeah, that show. Yeah.
My old stomping grounds on Zoom. Email or Zmail. Send it to Zoom. I wonder if Zmail has phishing attempts as well. We should look into that.
Yeah, you should get in touch with the Zoom folks about that.
I
boy, man, I am so old. I mean, when I watched Zoom, the last time I watched Zoom, I probably one of the RFCs for email might have existed. I don't know. I mean, we're talking a pretty long time ago. Anyway,
quick,
yes.
Quick question, Callie.
Yes.
Just for today, you know, today's a very important day. No one would lie to each other. No one's going to tell any lies today. Can you confirm or deny that you have been contacted to star in a Zoom reboot?
I cannot confirm or deny, but it's strongly suggested that there will be a Zoom reboot, and I will come back with the ghost of my dog.
With grown-ups on it?
With grown-ups. It's like, oh, if I came back, if I did the same segment that I did before, it's like I need another dog because my dog is sadly not here anymore.
Well, adults we can play. CGI the dog in.
We can. This is what we use AI for.
We can
for.
De-age the dog.
Yeah. Adults play kickball, so adults, you know, can go back and do any number of things, revisiting them that they, you know, did as kids. So why not a Zoom episode that's all adults?
Yeah.
Reboot. You know what they should have? They should have summer camp for adults. I seriously want to go to the woods for 3 weeks and canoe and,
you know what?
Do they, archery and...
They do.
They do have that?
That's I have seen that. Yeah. Mm. It might actually be in Washington. I'm not quite sure. You'd have to...
I have not Googled that, so I could answer my own question really quickly.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Maybe that should be my gold for later on in the show.
Yeah, that's a great gold. I guess my final question to take it back to the subject at hand is what's the best way to mitigate attacks like thread hijacking? Is the answer can't just be less curious, right?
No, that's never a good answer. curiosity is a wonderful thing, but it should never be the motivation for opening an attachment on an unexpected email. So this is really awareness is the answer here. And it's great that Brian Krebs did this article on this because he has got a big following. And so there's probably a few thousand people who are now more aware of what thread hijacking is, not to mention the many millions who will hear it on this podcast. But there's better awareness around this. And so it's like any other kind of social engineering. Once you understand a little more about what's out there and how the initiators of it are expecting you to respond, it makes it much easier to use that big pattern matching machine between your ears and recognize those patterns and halt the process of reaching for that mouse button to click on the attachment. Don't do it.
Oh, but it's so enticing, though.
I know.
I got to know.
It's right there, you know?
That's what they're counting on.
Oh, boy. Well, I think this brings us into our hoodie rating. If you are a newer listener to the show, we like to end these discussions by giving the story a rating from 1 to 10 hoodies, if you think of the stereotypical hacker in a hoodie. 10 is awful, just like awful end of days. This is the worst attack ever. One is, you know, we're aware of it and it's not so bad and we're going to go about our day. But yeah, Taylor, I'll start with you. Having, you know, listened to Tim's, explanation of what's going on, how would you rate this?
It's a clever bit of pretexting. I'm going to give it 2.23 hoodies. 2.25.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that just because the stitching would have been too difficult on 0.23?
Yep.
Yeah, and she's like, your bobbin's getting stuck, and it's just
Well, that
kind
just
of
sticks my bobbins. Maybe that's what we should say for the grievances. Is something that just sticks your bobbins.
I like that. What is the 0.25 hoodie, Taylor?
It's just sleeves. You got to kind of throw them on.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a fashion statement. Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. I like that. Yeah. Just sleeves.
Yeah.
I like that. Very Avril Lavigne. All right.
Oh, is that a thing that she's done?
I would imagine. I'm not.
Yeah, I can sort of picture it.
I'm not totally sure, but I can see it. Tim, what about you? Do you feel similarly?
You'd need some like suspenders or something to hold the sleeves up, right? How does that work? Gravity is working against you there. So unless, you know, they're tight sleeves and your guns are just that big that they're gonna cling on there.
Not mine, but somebody else's, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was in the same neighborhood. I'll give it 3 hoodies because some people are really good at writing lures and they're gonna get a certain percentage of victims just because they're very good at grabbing that curiosity. But this is not a drop everything and go, you know, lock stuff down in your environment kind of thing. It's one of the kinds of security issues that I think really does lend itself quite well to user training. And anybody who's listened to this podcast for a while knows that in the eternal debate about whether it's futility or not to do user awareness training, I am fully on the side of yes, do more training. I think it really helps. So, so put me down for 3 hoodies, even.
Can do. All right. Well, thanks, Tim. I appreciate you walking us through that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about a recent CISA alert. So please stay tuned and we will be right back.
Hi there, Breaking Badness friends and family. Colonel Panic, or Tim, here from the team. If this is your first time hearing our production, welcome aboard. If you're a longtime listener, you can't be a first-time caller because we don't do that. But what you can do is leave us a 5-star rating and, if you're feeling extra ambitious, a review wherever you get your podcasts. And for new and returning listeners alike, tell a friend if you're enjoying what you're hearing. Thanks a bunch, and now let's get back to the show.
And we're back.
Just like that.
Just like that. How are you guys?
Oh, feeling good. Yeah. I went out and conducted a bunch of user awareness training about thread hijacking, so now there are a lot of people that are safer.
I like how productive you are with your breaks.
Well, sometimes I just go lie on the beach during the break, but this time I felt the need to do that.
That's good. Anybody play any April Fool's tricks on either of you during the break?
I would never.
You would never? I've never.
No, but she was asking if you were the recipient.
Yeah. So
would they never? That's the question. You know, my son is a huge prankster. He has not done anything yet, but the day is far from over here on the west coast of the United States.
Oh, yeah, you'll have to... Go ahead, T.
Oh, so you're probably playing right into the pranks right now.
It's entirely possible.
You're just kind of like a sitting duck over there. Well, you'll have to tell us what transpires after today. I'll be following up with you to see what happened. But yeah, we're gonna talk about a security alert you can hang your hat on. So CISA issued an alert regarding a reported supply chain compromise affecting XZ Utils. We're gonna talk to Taylor on this one. So Taylor, what are XZ Utils, or is it is XZ Utils? For those
what
that may not know,
XZ
yeah,
Utils?
What's that?
Yeah,
or
so,
XZ for our friends.
Oh,
in the
yeah,
that's true. So XZ Utils, a super popular compression library used in Linux to make files smaller and then make them large again. So you compress and decompress the size of the file. Very popular, very performant for single file usage. So it gets kind of used to wrap everything up once everything has been turned, you know, is compressed as it can be. And then you throw it into this thing, compresses it, and is used super widely by, I don't know, everybody? Tim?
Everybody?
Yeah, I think so.
So that makes this pretty, pretty critical.
Yeah, there's this XKCD comic that kind of has this kind of high-level architecture of like kind of the world of software. And then you see that there's one tiny little load-bearing pillar down at the bottom that says, like, hey, incredibly critical open source project maintained by, like, one person in Nebraska.
That's one of the most famous XKCDs, yeah. I think, at this point.
And it was, you know, that comic was never more true than Friday afternoon.
Of course it's a Friday afternoon.
I know.
It can never be Monday morning.
I mean, it'd be a drag to get it on Monday morning, too, first thing.
Yeah, you know, no, this like, one would have been
like
a bummer.
Like Tuesday afternoon is maybe it's just about the right time to get that kind of news.
Yeah, if we could work toward that, I think we'd be in pretty good shape. But yeah.
And so, you know, what happened on Friday was that a developer at Microsoft was testing some newer builds of some software that included a little package, a new version of XV that had just been dropped, and noticed that the SSH connections took an extra 500 milliseconds when that software was being used, and decided to start poking around as a result of that.
Wait, how long exactly is 500 milliseconds for people like me that don't know that?
It's exactly half a second.
Okay, so just in that amount of time,
yep,
that's enough time to be like, something's funky here?
Absolutely. And I think we're all very glad this person decided to dive into this because, yeah, they discovered a 2-year-plus-long conspiracy essentially to plant a backdoor into this critical open source project that is used by, like, virtually everybody on the planet.
By the way, there's an excellent meme about this, which we should link to in the show notes as well, on the person noticing the that 500 millisecond time difference.
Please share that my way, and I'll share it in the show notes for sure.
And actually, big shout out to Andres Freund. I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing that correctly, but they discovered this. They work on Postgres over at Microsoft and are, boy, eagle eye.
That is the definition of eagle eye, that their picture should be next to that phrase. So the findings state that the latest versions of the XE tools and libraries contain malicious code, which appear to be intended to allow unauthorized access. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Just like,
yeah, how did this get in there? So this starts like a couple years ago when, again, the reason that XKCD joke lands so well is how true it is. You have these critically important free and open source software projects that, you know, everybody kind of leverages, and they're generally maintained by a handful of people. They may have started as a labor of love or a project, you know, in school or some type of side thing, or, you know, in some cases, in this case, the person who's been working on this for, you know, over 10 years, right? So these libraries get included and used in all of the kind of downstream releases of Linux. And so this, this maintainer, you know, was complaining. So they're not complaining, but hey, you know, there's a lot of fixes that need to be done here. This code, you know, may not be great. It'd be great if I had more maintainers. And then out of nowhere, someone showed up and started, a couple of sock puppet accounts show up and start kind of manipulating the scene here by, you know, submitting some requests and saying, hey, we should do things a certain way. And then, you know, coming in and fixing a bug and kind of getting into the good graces of the maintainer of these utilities for compression. And, you know, this long con kind of goes over the course of a couple of years. It includes many hundreds of commits to not just this project, but other projects along the way. And, you know, folks that are, you know, sometimes, hey, I'd like to see something fixed here. And then, oh, this person who just happens to be working with the XV Utils thing for the last couple of years just magically is able to fix certain things and get them pushed into other code bases. So there's a lot of kind of detective work going on right now, looking at all the different commits that were made across these various sock puppet accounts, the fake accounts that were used here. But essentially, your culprit had packaged up a backdoor in some very cleverly disguised test files that came along with the new packaging of like their kind of bleeding edge version of this utility set. And so these test files are just kind of garbage files. They're supposed to be garbage files to be used for testing compression and benchmarking. Their little backdoor did was that it kind of deobfuscated some code from those test files that then kind of wrapped around the SSH connection that any, you know, server that was using this stuff was able to do, and essentially backdoor into the machine.
Oh, gotcha. So have any Fedora Linux 40 builds been compromised at this time?
I think that was on the list. There's a list of those because the malicious code is in version like 5.6.0 and 5.6.1. They're not in the major like for Red Hat and Debian releases, but they're in kind of you have a multiple release states for any given kind of Linux flavor, where you may have a support, like a long-term support version. You may have we're working on this next release version or many releases away. And so, you know, folks can kind of choose to opt in to running newer and potentially, you know, faster or better versions of it, and sometimes worse versions like we see here.
Gotcha. So what should folks do if they're running an affected distribution?
Oh, that's what can they do to potentially undo this? Is update to the
just
newest
disconnect
versions.
All their computers from the internet.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
burn it all down and start over.
as our friend researcher Joe Saint-Savé said, sometimes the only option is to nuke and pave, right?
Yep. Yes,
sense.
Absolutely. So is that the answer? Nuke and pave?
You know, we don't know what we don't know here. I think if you're in a position to be able to do that, it'd be a great option. You know, obviously patching to the newer versions of this. We're lucky in that this got caught before it made any kind of mainstream release for this, but it was on Macs in the form of homebrew utils. So, you know, it got out enough.
Oh boy. And what does SZA have to say about all this? What are their recommendations?
You know, honestly, for them, they're saying like, hey, downgrade your utils to the old version. You know, hunt for any malicious activity and then report the findings to SZA. Right. So, you know, words to live by.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my gosh. Well, where do you think we go from here? We're going to probably be hearing about this for a little bit then, or is not the last time we will be talking about this.
You know, I think what we're seeing now is a new threat model has opened up for us a little bit that we, you know, in the back of our minds probably knew existed. Like, sure, a long con could take out an open source maintainer and, you know, potentially damage the ecosystem or backdoor the ecosystem.
Well, the SolarWinds thing was a long con, right? I mean, that was quite a long time in the making.
For sure. But this, you know, even that would be limited to SolarWinds users, right? So here,
right.
You know, we're even going up the chain to the OS, to the kernel. We're trying to backdoor every OS, or, you know, and they were, look, it looked like they were targeting enterprise. So Red Hat and Debian. So, you know, it's just this is very early on. There's going to be a lot of investigation and running down of these things. I guess maybe the good news is this got caught, right? So, you know, this is proof of a somewhat working ecosystem to help root this stuff out.
Yeah, that's the silver lining. I like that. So I think this takes us into our hoodie rating, and I have thoughts on where the hoodie rating for this might go. But Tim, what are you thinking as a rating for this particular scenario?
Well, if you look at the CVE, they've kind of made their statement. It's a 10. So,
do you agree?
I'm pretty far up there. You know, there are the footprint of Linux is enormous. The footprint of just Red Hat by itself is pretty enormous. And this is a pretty serious backdoor. So I don't know. I'm going to say... And understand that I'm pretty conservative about my hoodie scale, so I'm going to give this 8, but I'm a tough grader, so put me down for 8 hoodies for this one. It's a fairly big deal.
Okay. Taylor, do you feel similarly?
Yeah. You know, this is... like, as soon as this hit on Friday, it was very clear that this was going to be... a big topic of discussion. So like how did we get here to where the maintainers of these really important projects are, you know, in a spot where they could be susceptible to a long campaign, which, you know, I think just about anybody could be on some level. But how do we, you know, check for this and prevent this from happening? And then what don't we know? You know, if this is the one that we caught, and we caught it because, you know, when you think about it, this occurred in a very performance-oriented sector of our of computing. So, you know, if it wasn't, if this is happening in other parts of the ecosystem where folks might not be as laser-eye focused on, you know, how long it takes to do an SSH connection, and you know, what don't we know from that? So, from that point of view, I'm gonna go. You know, I'll go 8.5 hoodies. I'm just going to cut it right down the middle.
Vertically?
Ooh.
Vertically hoodie? Yeah.
Diagonal.
Ooh, that is a choice. All right.
I like it. I like the diagonal hoodie concept.
Me too. I can see it. It's very fashionable.
Coming to a runway near you.
Yes. Oh, boy. Well, we are going to, you know, we'll likely be talking about this again on the podcast in the future. But thank you, Taylor, for sharing all of those details with us. Before we exit for today, do we want to talk about some gold guidance and grievances?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, if you're a newer listener, first of all, thank you for joining us. We do like to conclude our shows with sharing what we call gold guidance and grievances. It's pretty much like it sounds, where we share something good from within the industry recently, any advice that we have, and anything that's bothering us. And these can be industry related or, just in general. We're not too stringent here with the rules, but we do start with the grievance and end with gold, because it is a bummer to end on a lower note. So we just heard from Taylor. So Tim, let's start with you for your gold guidance and grievances, not in that order.
Okay, here we go. So my grievance, I could have picked any number of things, so I'm just picking a specific one. It is that, as surprising exactly no one, there is a profusion of conspiracy theories about the Key Bridge ship strike and collapse in Baltimore a few days ago, as of when we're recording this. So, of course, there are a bunch of conspiracy theories about that, but I find that particularly obnoxious. So that's my grievance. That really, what was it? It was, what does it do to your bobbins? does that to my bobbins.
I can't remember. And it was so
it's
good.
Like locks your bobbins or something. Anyway, that does that. My guidance, if you live anywhere in the path of totality, my goodness, do not be indoors doing nothing when the eclipse passes over. I'm envious of the people that are in the path of the total eclipse that's coming up this week. So go see the eclipse. And I may even try to do something silly like find a webcam from a place that is in that path and just watch it on the webcam. So do that. My gold, this is old gold, not to be confused with the terrible beer of the same name. But this has been around forever. But my goodness, McSweeney's.net. Such a great site. And so if we have any listeners who are not familiar, McSweeney's Internet Tendency is a humor site with contributed articles by both well-known writers as well as people that nobody's ever heard of. But it's like The Onion meets The Atlantic, maybe would be how I would describe it, but it's an awesome site. So go check out McSweeney's.
That's a great gold to have. Is there something recently that you read that you'd recommend to folks on there?
Oh my gosh. Not that I can say on a family podcast.
That's true.
So yeah. No, just go check it out and spelunk around and you'll find great things on there.
I know it's not fall, but every fall they roll it back out about decorative gourds.
Yes.
And it's so good.
And you can find it any time of year. So you have to put into your favorite search bar is it's decorative gourd season. You don't need to do the next word. You'll find it.
You'll find it. So I'm actually in the path for the eclipse. Being in Cleveland, but being in Cleveland, it's supposed to be like overcast that day.
Oh, that is such a bummer. Well, I guess it'll be darker overcast for a while.
Yeah, so it's just like, people are traveling here, and I kind of feel like you're gonna be a little disappointed by that.
I mean, that's a bummer, but it's actually kind of interesting too. Like, I've never seen that I can recall video or photos or whatever of a place that was in the path of totality where it was overcast. And I mean, if it gets dark in a sunny location, it'll get wicked dark in an overcast place. So that might have its own kind of interesting effect.
That's
Take
true.
Photos.
Okay, I can do that for y'all. Taylor, what are you thinking? Gold guidance and grievances, not in that order.
Let's see. Grievances, another giant typo squatting campaign is targeting PyPy and Python developers and namespaces in that ecosystem. So more supply chain stuff. There's one that stuck out to me this is from Lasso Security, and we can post a link, but there's a blog on AI package hallucinations. So this is another supply chain oriented thing, but it turns out that the various LLMs all will have some consistency to, if you're asking them to write code, they tend to hallucinate the same types of fake packages or utilities for you to use in your code, over time. So there is now an imaginary surface area for namespaces in the supply chain.
As if we didn't have enough to worry about. Right?
Oh man. And so I thought that was really interesting. That's a guidance, a grievance, I don't know. but I found that really fascinating that the LLMs, the certain LLMs coalesce around the same types of hallucinations, and you can use that against them in building little utilities that exist that they will then just put into people's code if they just run things blindly from them, which of course they do. Why wouldn't they? There you go.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for sharing. All right, we've reached the end, folks. I can't believe it, but it was another great episode. Thank you both, Tim and Taylor, for being here and sharing your insights about, these XE utils and the supply chain compromise and learning a little more about thread hijacking. This is great stuff. And thank you to our listeners. And we hope that you'll come back next week because we'll have another all new episode of Breaking Badness. And again, if you're going to be at RSA in May, Taylor and I will be there for sure. If you'd like to join us to do some podcasting, absolutely let us know. I'll link my, I've got a Google form to gauge people's interest. We'll try to set aside some time and we can meet and talk about all things InfoSec.
Yay. Organic, fresh, farm to table podcasting.
Yeah. So if you're
right in the heart of San Francisco.
Yeah. If you're a fan of the show, if you've got some thoughts, we want to hear them. So please join us. But thanks everybody. And we will catch you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's about all we have for this week. You can find us on Twitter @DomainTools. All of the articles and IOCs mentioned today will be included in our blog post, which can be found at domaintools.com/resources/podcasts. Catch us every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time when we publish our podcast and blog. We'll see you next week on another episode of Breaking Badness. Until then, remember, don't drink and click.